Hey guys! Well, in this episode, we talk about early bird tickets for All Souls Con, but we just got some new information, so I wanted to make sure I came on here before we start this episode and tell you that Penguin Books is now sponsoring the live stream. So now online streaming is free. That's great news. So even if you can't make it to All Souls Con, it'll cost you literally nothing. To register for a free online pass, go to allsoulscon.org/tickets. You must register to access the live stream. So, yay! We'll see you there. On with the show.
Demons Discuss, take 13, the one with the first five.
Welcome to Demons Discuss, the unofficial podcast about the All Souls universe and the topics that orbit it. We're your hosts, Angela, Jean, and Valerie. I'm Valerie, and with me is Angela and Jean. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello, everyone.
And today we are diving into the chapters. And before we start, we're going to start with a discusser email from Steven.
Our question to our discussers were their thoughts on their first five chapters of A Discovery of Witches. So Steven says, okay, first thought, are you encouraging me to start my 10th or 11th reread / listen?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes. Yes, we are.
Mm-hmm. Always. We're enablers.
It takes some restraint to stop at chapter 6. I was first hooked into the story at the scene in chapter 2 when Matthew was introduced after Diana pulled a book off the high shelf. Rereading these chapters brings out more of those subtle clues, like when Ashmo 782 pulled on something dark and knotted inside me, Diana says. That's all for now. Keep up the good work. I listen to the podcast on my old iPod Touch, stuck on iOS 6.1.6, so can't see a simple way to leave a review. Steven.
No, that's okay, Steven. We forgive you.
And we'd rather hear from you every week. It makes our week.
Exactly. I love his email. So that actually is more day brightening than a review. But for everyone else, if you can, leave a review.
What did we call him? Our discusser in chief. Yes.
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 And we'll tell you guys how to become a discusser later on in this episode. But for now, let's dive into these chapters since we've already covered so many of the primer subjects, and we're going to continue to do that. But every two episodes or so, or when we feel like it, we're going to go through this series five chapters at a time. And that's why we're calling this the first five, because we're diving into the first five chapters. And we're not going to really outline this because it'd be boring if I read you the outline. It'd be like, okay, chapter one, now chapter two, now chapter three. So let's.
And then you would need the elevator lady voice. Yes.
And I don't have that this morning. I do not have that.
No.
Okay, so chapter one, guys, let's dive into it. Let's do it.
All right.
I love the book. I love the fact that Ashmole 782 is whispering and chattering and won't give up its slip.
I did too. That's kind of what hooked me. It was the voices in the background, the chattering, the muffled, and you know, when she was talking to Sean and she's like, "Did you hear that?" I had to know more. And I didn't even care it was the book. I thought it was like, I don't know, supernatural voices.
The spirits of the library.
Exactly. Right.
Just I just love it so much.
I have to say though, some of this, I mean, as you start almost any book, you don't really know where it's going to go. But, you know, when she's looking at manuscripts and describing what's on the pages, I couldn't exactly picture what manuscript she was talking about or what it looked like or if it was one of a kind.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because prior to this, we were kind of manuscript dumb or manuscript.
Virgin.
Yeah. Manuscript ignorant or I don't know. I'm making up terms. My mouth is not even working today.
It's accurate though, I believe.
Yeah. But now Angela posts them all over social media and I.
Yeah. She's on a first name basis with a Getty, I swear.
Well.
They love the demons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And we love them. That's why. Yeah. But no, I mean, so I didn't know that this was like a one of a, I thought it was a one of a kind book. Like this was the only one in the world, not knowing that there are thousands out there, you know, very closely guarded by museums and libraries.
Right. And that she was comparing it to others like it.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right.
Who knew that there were that many books about alchemy out there?
Right. But I loved how the story building or the world building begins with her backstory. That got me more interested too, hearing about the bishops and their lineage and her mother and father.
Yeah, so here's where like she's establishing her not wanting to be a witch. We find out she's a witch, and right away we kind of know that she wants no part of it.
She's a reluctant witch. Very reluctant.
Very well. She got there with her intellect, remember?
Well, yeah.
That's what turned me off about it.
Methinks the lady does protest.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And there is our first Shakespeare reference in the trilogy. It may not be overt, but there it is. Right.
Well, and also there was the rub for me, because I'm reading a fantasy book wanting to know about supernatural and preternatural creatures. And here I have the main character that I know of so far who doesn't want to use her powers. And I didn't really understand that, but that was the good tension, I guess, that I needed as a reader to be pulled in and find out more.
And it has to figure out what's her deal.
I mean, she was ratty about the whole thing too.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and then we find out later on there is a reason why she's bratty about it. But at this point in time, all I know is she wants nothing to do with it. She runs into another witch. Which was Jillian? This was the first chapter. She ran into Jillian, right? Mm-hmm. So her encounter with Jillian just made it known that she, that's cool that you're having a little witch party, but I want nothing to do with it. I'm just going to hang out here with my book. And
I was going to say, my thing with the whole thing is, I was one of those nerdy girls that didn't have a lot of friends and whatnot. But for some reason, Diana was not very relatable to me, which was really odd, because on paper, it's like, well, gosh, we're alike. We're kind of misfits and too smart for our own good. And
right.
You know, don't really have a place in the normal world. And I hate to say normal because there's no such thing as normal, but
right.
You know what I mean.
The quote unquote normal world.
Conventional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Conventional world. That's a better way of putting
it.
Yeah. But there was something about her. I just couldn't warm up to her. I don't know. And in the first five chapters, I couldn't explain to you why. I just wish I would have had a more sympathetic reaction to her, but it just seemed like she was pushing everybody away with both hands and not even trying. Maybe that was it.
Yeah. No.
I must have picked up on her stubbornness early on, because I have stubborn people in my family. So when Jillian invited her to gather, I'm like, why doesn't she just go? You know, like, pick your battles. Just go, show up. You'll shut everyone up. Then you can leave right away. But she stands her ground, which is important throughout the trilogy. But to me, I was like, just please, just go.
Yeah.
Yeah, but on the other hand, her standing her ground gets her into so much trouble. It's just like Matthew's looking before, you know, not thinking things through and jumping in gets him into trouble. They both have these habits they cling to, and, well, that's why we have a trilogy.
I was going to say, little do you know that's who they are, and that's who they will remain throughout the books.
Right. The one phrase that got me was, I relied on my intellect to get here. And what I found funny was she didn't want to rely on her witchcraft or any of that. However, she had no problem using her scholarly credentials to get what she needed. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. She lorded it over Sean to get him to bend the rules for the book.
So she's not above it all. She's just...
No.
Yeah. Just not with her witchcraft.
No.
I think she felt like she earned her credentials, where she was just born or bestowed upon with the gifts of her lineage.
Right. And little did she know she was using her lineage to get to her credentials, right?
Right. I don't think you have one without the other. And Matthew's, tries to point that out.
Yeah, I agree. But the other thing is, too, is just to whether it's your lineage or your credentials, to use that to lord something over or gain an advantage, it's the same old shit, different day. You're still trying to game the system in some way or another.
Right.
So I'm not using my witchcraft. It's like, but you're using your credentials to try and get more than what you're entitled to, and it's still not cool.
Or maybe Sean was doing it as a favor, because they seem, from her description, to be old pals, but she still accepted it gladly, the exceptions.
Right.
She didn't stop it from happening.
Right.
And that is, you bring up Sean. Sean's another good thing. I thought there was going to be more. They seemed like they had a deeper, longer-lasting relationship that just sort of fritters by the wayside as everything unfolds. But I mean, in that first moment, I thought, oh, he's going to be her connection to the human, the human world, because there seemed to be a connection between the two of them.
Right. They had
from maybe shared study or just being students together, I guess.
And she said they shared many a drink at the pink stuccoed pub across the street. So I thought, they're on a familiar basis, but why is he fetching books for her? But I guess maybe he's, I don't know. Strange questions pop in my head.
Right. Later on, isn't it it revealed that he had kind of a crush on her?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, beyond these first five chapters. And right. Which is another way she wasn't above using her feminine wiles either, you know? So
right.
What's the difference right. with the witchcraft here, lady? So, you know, Diana was just a little bit, she kind of graded me the wrong way, but I slogged through. I made it. And she, what fascinated me was her description of her parents, her mother, and her mother's powers. And
yes,
but you know, she kind of glosses over her dad, and we don't get a real sense of what his powers were. But she mentioned that Stephen Proctor, and the name Proctor never rang a bell with me. Until later, and I was like, oh, that's right, I did read The Crucible. So the Proctor is a prominent witch name,
right,
along with Bishop.
True. I don't know. Rebecca was a witch I'd want to hang out with, really and truly.
Yeah. I don't know. She kind of described her powers a little bit scary sometimes, where she would trance out.
Yeah, she did.
You know?
Yeah, true.
But, you know.
But I like scary, remember? I like the stalking, too.
Right.
But it was clear that Rebecca had a gift. I mean, because she describes Rebecca, yeah, and then she describes Sarah, who it seemed more of a conventional, what you'd pictured, witchcraft with lores and, you know, spells and charms and the grimoire. But Rebecca...
Practical magic kind of witch.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Where Rebecca had this second sight or foresight and could see beneath the surface, which made it, you're intriguing.
Right. I got intrigued by, like, the little things, like, you know, doing the laundry or doing the dishes just by placing the dishes and snapping your fingers. I'm like, oh, yeah.
Having a permission slip show up at school. Yeah. Thank you. I would love to have that.
Well, gosh, that was the reason we all loved Bewitched when we were little.
Right. I dream a genie or Bewitched.
Right.
Crinkle your nose and have it be done.
Definitely.
So in chapter two, we meet Matthew. And
dun, dun, dun.
So this was the night where everybody was supposed to be at their Maybon celebrations. And she's in the library all by herself studying, or all by herself, we think, and enter Matthew.
Wait, before we go into Matthew, let's just say, she's just not at any library, which I didn't know much about the Bodleian Library either when I first read this. So it's like Deb says, she tries to not ever make anything up if she doesn't have to. So I remember we've seen questions out there. I didn't know the Bodleian was real. It is real. And it's not surprising if you don't know it when you're first reading it.
Yeah, this is true. I had heard of the Bodleian this is only by happenstance, because I happened to be stationed in England for 4 years and, you know, people would mention it. We lived by actually Cambridge University. We didn't live by Oxford. So, you know, there was a big competing factor over there. So, we visited Cambridge's library, but people would mention the Bodleian, and I'm like, I don't know what that is. I never had the opportunity to visit, but through pictures, it appears gorgeous.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you take Deb's descriptions in some of these passages and you compare it to a picture that she'll put on Pinterest, whatnot, it's almost word for word. I mean, she's describing what she's seeing. It's not anything made up, for sure.
Right. And that actual balcony that where Diana stood, where she first saw Matthew, that kind of gave me chills. That's why I post it every once in a while on Facebook.
I like that.
Yeah, I post it maybe once every 3 months. I'm like, I'm going to post it again. Sure. People need to see this again.
It never gets old.
It doesn't get old. No.
No. That in the bridge's eyes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
The bridge never gets old either.
No.
I mean, honestly, on social media, people will post the bridge's eyes a lot. It never gets old, but I intuitively will look for Matthew as if he's real. But he is real, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He exists. We talked to him on Facebook.
Black Jaguar go by.
Yeah. All right. So enter Matthew. You guys, thoughts on Matthew's entrance?
Yes. We hear a low chuckle.
Mm.
Yes. And that did it for me. Okay, this is where it's going to start getting good.
And it gets good, too, because I think in the previous chapter, she describes how it feels when a witch looks at her, when a demon looks at her. And then Matthew enters and she says, but when a vampire stares, it feels cold, focused, and dangerous. So I thought that was really neat that she differentiated how the creatures look at her and how she feels when the creatures look at her. So she knew immediately a vampire was focused on her. It made me scared, actually. I thought something was going to happen. I didn't trust Matthew. I didn't find it romantic at this point. I thought she was prey. I really did.
Yeah. No, didn't find it romantic at all. I was like, so are you gonna, what are you gonna do? Are you gonna get yourself out of here? Are you gonna use that witchcraft now? What? You know?
Right, exactly. Is this gonna be number
but
six?
I knew that wasn't gonna happen because then where does the rest of the book go? There's no two more books.
Yeah, this is true.
I mean, I just looked at this from a practical standpoint. It's like, she's not Vampire Chow.
No, I knew that as well because, like I said, I had seen Shadow of Night review. And so I knew that they were on a mission in the second book. So I knew something, they had to work it out in the first book, but I still didn't trust him. He could be a double crossing vampire that, you know, I don't know, had to work itself out, but I was wondering where it was going to go.
Yeah, that's true.
Mr. Darcy with fangs. He kind of was. I mean, he was kind of a snobby jerk to begin with.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, she's not as old as I expected. It's like, I thought she'd be older and dumpier. I mean, that was kind of the tone of his voice. It's like,
I wasn't impressed with his credentials or any of that. But I've said this before. It's just like, here comes this vampire. He's just too much. He's just extra. You know, he has the card with all the credentials. He's got, you know, would you like to go to dinner with me? Hell no, I don't want to go to dinner with you. I don't want, you know.
Yes. And here I was like, yes, I do. I just said I was terrified of you.
Like, Val, but you would be the worst heroine in a romantic saga.
I know. I know.
Just so doubting.
See, I'd be the one that people were yelling at in the book. She just said she was terrified of him and now she's going to breakfast with him. Yes, I was.
Yeah. And I'd be throwing things at you.
I would be the one that's Vampire Chow. What would happen? Sure. Okay.
I did.
But what's interesting.
No, go ahead.
What's interesting is that she, again, Diana shows just how sheltered she is because she doesn't know much about what demons are except for what Sarah tells her. And she only has experience with one other vampire who she really interacted with, that Jeremy from Switzerland. And now she's only encountered.
He sounded kind of loche.
Right. He did. Well, he was, I think. But now she's faced with Matthew.
Right. I thought it was interesting that she said, sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Like, wasn't that from the Sermon of the Mount?
It's St. Matthew.
Yeah, the Gospel of Matthew.
It is the Gospel of Matthew. Right. Yeah. So there's a little foreshadowing.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So there's an egg for you people.
Well, not to mention the day that they met, what day this is.
Right.
Yep.
So, you know.
Exactly.
Basically, that means deal with all that unpleasant stuff tomorrow and don't think about it now, which was kind of funny because she was just like, okay, I just met a vampire, but I'm not going to deal with that now. Just gonna go back to my room and chill out and not think about it. So yeah, that was clever.
I get lectured at by her aunt.
Right. So, and then she goes back
and
her rooms.
Yelling at her.
Yeah, she goes back to her rooms. And another thing I noticed when I was going through these chapters, she turns on the radio or she turns on whatever she's listening to. And the pure tones of Mozart fill the air, according to this. And
I still think Mozart's a demon, but that's just me. I digress.
So, I mean, was that part of Matthew's scheme? Because we're going into the next chapter where he jumps in the room after she falls asleep. And I'm assuming Mozart was still playing because later on in the chapters, isn't he playing Mozart in the car for?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I didn't notice that before, but I was like, oh, okay.
He says no one can feel tense around Mozart.
Right.
Huh.
So, and then we're also introduced to Sarah and Emily via a phone call saying she just met a vampire. And what were your thoughts on Sarah and Emily?
My first thoughts are I hate to talk on the phone and I wouldn't have made that phone call. But we needed it for the sake of the book. So
right,
and they kind of tag teamed her. Man,
I think that was good though. I think that was good. That showed what a good yin and yang they were. But they were a good couple that complemented each other.
Yeah,
and it made me
because God, Sarah on her own would have been horrible.
Yeah,
she was very much Archie Bunker at first.
Yeah, you need someone to soften her.
See, I liked Sarah from the get go. I was just like, yeah, that's right. You tell her, you know.
and no one was surprised ever by that. Yeah.
I thought Sarah was like, you know, I thought Diana needed a dose of reality. And I felt Sarah was the reality for her.
Yeah, this is true.
I thought Sarah was harsh. And then I thought Emily was too soft. So I don't know. They were complete different ends of the spectrum for me.
It's true.
I sat there and thought, oh God, all three of them under the same roof for years. I don't even want it.
Right.
I don't even want to imagine it.
Well, I mean, Diana did say she'd go into a room and all of a sudden the chairs would be piled on top of each other. Imagine the energy and the anxiety and the tension and the teenage angst manifesting itself in that way. I mean, that must have been one heck of a house.
Yeah. And then imagine Sarah having to raise that
right
in that house. So yeah. I totally got Sarah. I did. A lot of people didn't get her and thought she was harsh, but I did get her. I was just like, nah, someone needs to shake Diana, and Sarah's just the person to do it, regardless of her, you know, regardless of her preconceived notions of other creatures and everything. That was just how she, you know, when you have that mm-hmm. crazy uncle who comes over on Thanksgiving and he just says the wild things, and you're just like, oh geez, you know. I figure she took on that role in the family.
Yeah, I think just from a reader, I was blind to Sarah, thinking she's trying to stop me from going on my date with this vampire. I don't like her meddling, please stop.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I wasn't trying to date Matthew, so maybe that's why I saw it a different way.
This is true.
Oh, gosh. And then Matthew sneaks into the rooms, and we're on to chapter 3. And this is, I call it Jean's chapter, because I'm not feeling that chapter at all. The stalking.
I love that chapter.
I know you do.
I like it, too.
My role in this trio to be the stupid romantic fool.
This is true. Well, me and Angela side-eye you.
Yeah, think about it this way. Mystery Man was also my favorite Kristen Ashley Man.
Right, right.
It all shakes out at the end.
Right, this is true. So Matthew, scaling the Bridge of Sighs and climbing into her rooms.
And I mean, I joke about the stalking, but the whole thing of it is I think that's the first time we see the magic bringing them together. I mean, it's the her gleam, the way that he's rooted to spot, and time sort of stands still for him, and he doesn't realize how it's passing, and all of a sudden it's hours later, and all he's doing is watching her sleep. But I mean, yeah, in a human sense, that's, fuck yeah, that's creepy. But when you think about it in a magical sense,
right.
It's almost like, what is it? A magic is desire made real.
Yeah.
It's almost like they don't know what's going on yet, but their magical selves have already
are drawn to each
started
other.
Started forming. Drawn to each other and started forming a bond. And I think at the end of that chapter, his thinking, you can almost see his thinking starting to change already. It's not just a matter of, okay, this chick might have the book in her room. It's like all of a sudden, I think he starts to at least subconsciously start thinking, wait, there's more going on
right
with all of this isn't just a matter of me coming up with a plot to go get an object.
It goes back to our discussor Stephen's comment about Diana saying something pulled on something dark and knotted inside of me. So it just seemed like that for both of them, whatever this Ashmole 782 was, like you said, it was magic that was starting to brew, and almost like picture it like a cyclone. It's starting to take shape and go faster and faster.
Right.
Yeah.
And then
for me at this point I thought it was still a mystery. So I didn't get creeped out that Matthew was in her rooms. I thought he's looking for this book. It's something like a spy move or a detective move. So he's just looking for it, and hopefully she doesn't wake up.
Right. And he's inconvenienced by the fact that he's fascinated.
Yes.
Right.
But he did consider taking a drink of her, and he decided not to.
Very, very good, Matthew. Yeah. Very proud of you.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yes. But we got a glimpse into what he saw. I mean, he saw the magic gleaming and escaping from her. And so you, as the reader, I got to feel like she's more powerful than she's letting on, or that she's admitting to herself anyways.
Right.
Yeah. Which also just starts, like you said, the tornado starts spinning and the mystery gets deeper. And now all of a sudden you throw the attraction in as well. And the way Deb paced that chapter and the way it unfolds, it's like you almost get the feeling that you're cycling through either the tides or sleep cycles, because it's like the way she words it, almost it rises and falls and sort of has a rhythm to it that lends you to almost being there, kind of thing. I don't know how else to explain it.
You know what I thought of when it's interesting that you say the rises and the falls. You know, like on the MacBook, when you put it to sleep, it's got a little light that, like, it looks like it's breathing while it's sleeping. Angela, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. That little light, and it kind of gets brighter, and then it gets softer, and it gets brighter. That's how I kind of pictured it. So those of you out there with a MacBook, when you close the lid and it's in sleep mode, just picture that little light, how it, the way Steve Jobs designed it, he wanted to make make it look like the
human eyes.
Yeah, he wanted to make the computer look like it was actually breathing and sleeping. And
wow.
It was really cool. When I read that, I was like, it really does look like it's breathing and sleeping because it rises and it falls and it gets, you know, brighter and dimmer. So
that's an awesome comparison.
Yeah.
Diana sleeps like a MacBook.
Well, it's foreshadowing of the Book of Life. There you go.
Right.
Right. And those of you with a Mac will never look at it the same now.
No, I won't. For sure.
Exactly.
Okay. So the next day, she goes into the Bodleian, and we're advancing chapters to chapter 4.
Yeah, I was going to say, chapter 4, she's also sort of hungover, like that. She's got that sleep hangover thing going.
Yes.
The taste of cloves in her mouth.
Yeah, you get the sense that she slept very restlessly. Even though she was sleeping in front of Matthew for 3-4 hours or however long it was, she woke up feeling unrested and all over the place.
Right.
Yeah. And isn't this also where she looks in the mirror in the morning and she's so beautiful? She just realizes how much she looks like her mother.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And she's got circles in her eyes, so she figures she might as well pack up, go out to the library, and start her work. And the ladies downstairs give her toast, and she's ready for her day.
And what, as I sit here right now thinking about it, it's almost like foreshadowing of her coming into her power, kind
exactly.
of. Exactly. It's like, okay.
Yes.
Okay, Matthew's here. All of this destiny stuff is going to start kicking into action and kicking into gear. And the first step is like, wow, I do look like my mom.
It's almost like
I am becoming that powerful witch.
Yes. She didn't know, but
recognizing she is.
Yes.
A powerful witch.
She had that first awareness because she said, when did that happen? Like she just noticed it now. And all of a sudden, isn't that interesting that she met Matthew the day before?
Right. Right. So her magic's starting to come out and she doesn't even know it. She doesn't even know what's happening to her.
But she does make the comment about her hair. Her hair is on end, or it's staticky, or she can't get it to lay flat, and it's supposed to be pent-up magic, according to Sarah. So I thought that was an interesting detail.
Is that the point where she started thinking, you know, oh, God, Matthew probably wakes up looking wonderful. Jerk.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she calls him Professor Claremont. So that's kind of an intimate thing to be thinking about Professor Claremont. You know, I bet he looks immaculate.
Right. Why are you thinking about Professor Claremont, lady? Ooh.
Okay, I'm back.
We didn't know you left.
Oh, I'm bad.
It just popped up on my iPad. Jean joined the group call. I'm like, oh, okay, that's nice.
Did you miss me? Apparently not.
We just kept on going. We didn't realize you rolled off the back of the wagon.
Right. Or left the kid at the gas station.
Oh, shit. Turn around.
That'd be me. I'm back. Hey, I was in the bathroom.
I'm going to leave this in for our audience. What we do a group call when we record this, and we lost Jean. Just in that little bit of the conversation and didn't even notice. And she comes back and says, I'm back. And poor Jean, we didn't even notice. Okay. So yeah, carry on.
Yeah, head count. All the kids are here.
Everybody's here. Okay.
Yep.
So the interesting part that I thought too is how uncomfortable she is in clothing. I mean, she wears the simplest of clothing and she can't seem to get a blazer on. She's like struggling with it.
Yeah.
And it just made me think that she's not comfortable in her own skin. I mean, because if you're confident, you could be wearing anything and it doesn't matter.
Right.
And not only that it's like she's uncomfortable in the uniform of the life she's chosen.
Right.
I mean, she's putting on her little professor blazer and blah, blah, blah. And like you said, she's struggling and it's ill-fitting. And at some point in time, I thought she had, there was rips in, rip in the lining or whatever, but it's just.
And up until now, she probably didn't care, but maybe Matthew's in the picture and now she's thinking about it.
So it just occurred to me. So it's like she was dressing for a role.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And it's a role that doesn't suit her any longer.
Right.
She just doesn't realize it yet. And then of course she's wondering what he looks like first thing in the morning.
Right.
Which is kind of funny and womanly, and sounds like the way she reacted, she's like, God, that's out of character for me.
Right.
Right.
And somehow resents the fact that she's out of character.
Right. So she goes into the library and right away there's kind of, you know, a hubbub going on. The people that run the library are rushing around trying to accommodate somebody, and she's thinking, you know, some VIP is somewhere and they're trying to arrange to get her seat, and she finds out she's going to be sitting next to Professor Claremont, and she's pretty upset about that.
I loved it. I, on the other hand, loved it. I clapped out loud.
Yeah, well, you know what made me laugh is she was peeking under the table to check out what he was wearing.
Right.
And here's where we get a bit of the human myths, where she makes a comment that, you know, something about Southern exposure, that she's kind of surprised that he would sit here because she thought, she thought that vampires might not be so comfortable basking in the sun. And he's like, right. Do you believe everything you read?
And then she makes a comment that he's probably heard everything everybody was saying about him because he has a hearing of a bat.
Right.
Talk about stereotyping. Shame on you, Diana.
Well, I mean, that's Sarah's influence, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Sarah was good for perpetuating stereotypes.
Yeah.
Okay, Val, you still didn't like Matthew at this point. When they're talking about the myths and she's saying about, you know, fangs and sunlight, and she said, but I've never met someone like you who'd like to bask in the glow either. And he says, how much direct experience have you had, Dr. Bishop, with someone like me? Okay, my heart beat it a little faster.
Especially the air quotes around someone like me.
Right. Exactly.
That was the best part.
And then we kind of, like right here in this chapter, when she's thinking to herself, we kind of find out that creatures are 10% of the overall population. You know, 1 in 10 creatures, or 1 of 10 people are going to be a creature. But not today in this library. It was 5 to 1. Yeah, it was 5 to 1 creatures to humans. So it kind of gives you an idea. Something has changed.
Right. Especially because Diana looks at the library as her home almost. You know, when she enters it, she is confronted with the familiar smell, and she just like falls into that book smell and the normal quietness of it.
Right. And she's
but not today.
It's her place to escape to, and it just doesn't happen.
And she's been invaded.
It's easy to pretend there.
Yeah.
Yes.
And this is where we meet the scary sisters and crazy latte loving demon Timothy. Uh-huh. That little vampire monk.
Well, do you know what else is interesting? That morning, she's trying to study how to create the black dragon and concoct a mystical blood from chemical ingredients.
Right. At the time, upon first read, did you have any idea what that was?
Is that Cora?
Huh.
I mean, I'm just looking at that right now going, God, could that be Cora?
It could be.
And then the talk of mystical blood.
Huh. It's interesting
Maybe that could be a foreshadowing of the Arbor Diana.
Right. The blood in the fireplace.
Right.
Yes.
Well, see?
Something new. There's always something new to find.
Oh, that's some new stuff. We're going to have to, after we're done here, we're going to have to look deeper into that.
Yeah.
And
then Timothy.
I know.
And then Knox. We get our first glimpse of Knox when he tries to get in her head. So what was your read on Knox when you first, you know, we first encounter him?
Very first encounter him, I just took it at face value. There's some killings going on, and he's there to investigate and give his professional opinion. I took it at face value.
Right. What did you think when he was trying to get in her head?
Well,
and then Matthew moves in to protect her like a falcon.
Right. And she even wonders, why does this vampire need to protect me from this witch? What's going on here?
Right.
So, yeah, that was an interesting encounter. This is where my interest started getting piqued right here.
Yes.
You know,
I was going to say, and right in this passage, what is so funny, just a few weeks ago, my drive to work takes me through some ranch land and rural country.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally got to witness a mating pair of hawks exhibiting just that behavior.
Really?
They were both sitting up on top of one of those big highway streetlights.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I thought, how odd, because the one had its wings like spread out and almost straight up. It was like really kind of wild. And then the other one sitting there. And then I thought about it for a second and realized, wait a minute, that's a mating behavior. They're mating. That's a mating behavior. That's exactly what that shielding looks like.
Wow.
Never thought I'd see that in nature, but it was kind of wild.
That's cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
It's different.
I'm going to look and see if there's any video.
for the show notes. Right. It's foreshadowing for the first five.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well,
because it was before we decided to do this, so that makes it even funnier.
So yeah, that whole library scene, it was very interesting to me. I kind of got the full depth and breadth of the Bodleian, you know, that's when I started wanting to see pictures of this place and see what the Selden Inn looked like and try to imagine all of these creatures looking at her, and she feels kind of closed in and invaded, but she presses on like, nothing to see here, you know, I'm going to keep studying, I'm going to keep doing what I need to do.
What did you think, though, when she said, you know, he's creating all this attention, everyone's like fawning over him, and all these creatures are coming because of him, and I guess, you know, I know she's not a reliable source, really.
Yeah.
So I believed it. But when he said, it's because of you, Diana, that, or Dr. Bishop, or whatever he called her at the time, I thought, whoa, this guy knows something. He's a little bit, I wonder how old, then I started to wonder how old he really was, because he said it with such conviction.
And he said it like someone who was in that world.
Yes.
Like, I know what's going on in this world and you don't. And then at the end of that day in the library, I think to everyone except her, or maybe even her, it was pretty clear that the library and academia was not going to be her sanctuary for very much longer.
Yes.
It was the turning. It was a turning point for me where I was like, okay, I guess we can press on a little more on this book and figure out more.
You didn't put it down
yet. No. It kept me going. And then we get into chapter 4 and Mr. Christopher Roberts.
Now we're still in chapter 4.
Oh, I mean, chapter 5, right?
Chapter 5 is Chris. We've got chapter 4 as she gets out, after she leaves the library. Don't forget the rowing.
Yes. Rowing and the running. And we learn about her adrenaline.
And Matthew running along the towpath.
Right.
But we also learned that she needed to do that. That was a necessary ritual. It wasn't something that she just wanted to do to stay in shape. It just, she needed to do it. Otherwise, adrenaline poisoned her system.
Right. And didn't we catch maybe a glimpse of Agatha?
Yeah. Well, and then then there was the demon on the bridge that may or may not have been Agatha.
Right.
Right.
So people are popping up everywhere. And I think Oxford's starting to close in on her and she's not.
Right.
Real happy about it.
That's when he confronted her, right? And said, no, this is about...
Yeah. He said that it's about you, not me.
Yeah, it's you. Right. And the rumors are true. You know, you really have no clue what's going on.
Right.
So, yeah, she got really defiant. And then he grabbed her and stalked her on the way home. Well, kind of followed her, and she knew it. So she gets back to the rooms, and then she starts cyber stalking him.
Yes. the tables turn.
Right.
Exactly.
So anyone who thought that
only he was better at it than her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then we get Chris, and she had a call a work colleague and say, hey, what do you know about this guy?
Right.
And we learned a lot about wolves and.
Right. And then didn't she try to tried to bust into one of his accounts with a password, right?
She did. Password.
She's pretty obsessed.
And even Diana Bishop uses Wikipedia. So just need to point that out to people.
Okay.
She used Wikipedia.
I imagine she found him on, you know, LinkedIn and, or tried to.
That's a good question. Would a vampire have a profile on LinkedIn?
LinkedIn, maybe Facebook.
She did look at the current fellows of the Royal Society.
Right.
Gerbert would.
He sure would.
Gerbert probably has a Tinder account. Swipe left, swipe right.
So I thought this was kind of dry information. I'm like, all right, he studies with wolves, which it turns out to be a good setup for later on. But still, I'm like, 1989, that's not far enough back. I hope that he's older than that.
Right. And knowing what we know now about Chris, we have the impression, I mean, on first read, we have the impression that Chris is sort of just an acquaintance or work friend.
He's kind of a throwaway character. I hesitate to call him a character. He's more like a placeholder.
Yeah. I had no idea.
It's a person with a name that has a very limited purpose.
Yeah. It means to get the information, the dirt on Matthew.
Yeah.
Right. So we had no idea on the scope of this friendship that later on in the third book that, you know, apparently they were BFFs, and I certainly didn't get that impression reading this here.
I don't either.
No.
No. I had a feeling they were good friends because of the bet.
The thing of it was, is they were, well, they were work friends. They were probably good work friends, and she probably didn't have any friends.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is she didn't even meet him until she was already faculty at Yale. I mean, it's not like their paths crossed during their studies.
Yeah.
Unlike it sounds like with Sean.
Right.
Well, and she said he suspected that she was different, but didn't know exactly how. So he didn't know her that well, at least in that sense.
Well, yeah, yeah. So it's kind of our impression, audience, that this was... Chris is kind of a retcon character. When I say retcon, retroactive continuity, that's what retcon means. Basically, he was meant to be something, but he was turned into something else later.
Ended up something else.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me look that up. So... a piece of new information that imposes a different interpretation of previously described events, which is perfect. That is the definition for retcon, which is perfect because that's how I saw Chris. I didn't see Chris as her BFF, someone who had visited, you know, her aunts and knew her that intimately. So just keep that in mind for when we get to those chapters, and I'm sure we'll unleash then.
I mean, that kind of fits with how Deb says that she writes, that she knows the beginning and the end. She doesn't know the actual journey to get there. So
yeah,
kind of fits with how she writes.
Yeah. So Chris was sort of a surprise in the third book, but...
Yeah, and then Chris also dropped that bomb about Matthew being kind of a pain in the rear end.
Yeah.
And intellectually snobby.
Right.
And sort of a misogynist.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That was his impression anyway. But I guess the way he explained it was he gets away with it because he's so smart.
He gets results. Yeah.
He's brilliant. So that's why everybody lets him get away with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris wasn't complaining. He I think, admired him professionally.
Yeah. So.
Well, that also changed.
We're only at chapter 5.
I know. Way ahead. Like 80 chapters ahead.
I'm just going to be quiet.
So, we learn about Diana's, you know, start. This is where we learn she has tenure. We learn that, you know, Chris got tenure a year before her. We learn that she's really interested in Matthew. She wants to know everything she wants to know. And this is where I started relating to her because I get hyper-focused. I obsess. And when I want to learn something about it, I become, when I get interested in a subject, I become near expert because, I'm very hyper focused. It's like, oh, this thing interests me. I must know everything about it. So,
yeah, you're the laser locking missile.
Yeah.
Target in sight.
Yeah. My husband kind of jokes. He's like, I guess we're going to be researching that for a while, aren't we? I'm like, yeah, we are. I'm going to figure out how to do it. I'm going to have everything for it. And that's it. But that's how she kind of hyper focuses on Matthew and tries to figure out everything about him.
Yeah. And trying to.
Yeah. And I can't tell whether she's happy or not when Chris tries to point out that she's acting like a teenage girl stalking a cute boy.
Yeah. Yeah. He even mentions that. He's like, what caught your interest here?
Well, they're both in self-denial, Matthew and Diana. So I think she just glossed over it and like, nah, I'd never be interested in him. So, but everyone was telling her that.
Yeah.
She just didn't listen.
Yeah, sure. That's so, yeah. So Chris was kind of her Hamish, wasn't he?
Yeah, in a sense.
In a sense.
I saw so.
I think so.
Not as interesting to me, though.
So chapter 5 closes. No.
Chapter 5 closes with a bet.
Yeah. And she's got more questions than answers. And as a reader, that's how I felt, too. There's so many pieces, and I don't even know where they're going to even be fitting in. I mean, they're just not even getting the edges of the puzzle together. And it's
really
pieces.
I agree.
Yeah.
So at the end of chapter 5, Val hasn't bailed on the book yet.
No. No.
I'm still reading, hoping that he finds an interesting girl today, Matthew.
Oh, like...
Jury's still out on Diana.
You're hoping Diana gets more interesting at this point.
Yeah.
And Angela...
She's kind of Mary Sue at this point.
And Angela, where are you at this point?
I want it to go somewhere. Like, let's just get this romance on the road and I don't know. At this point, I didn't have the
page... On the road.
Yeah, I didn't have the patience of Matthew. I mean, you know, and I, actually, I was interested in finding out more about Matthew. That's where my interest lied.
Right.
Oh, I was like, let's get into the history. I want to know how old this dude is.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. I remember being interested in that.
And I want to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to know more about him because he was hiding a ton.
Like I said, some of the reviews I've read, you know, people roll their eyes that he is so affluent and that he knew everybody. And that's what I want, my vampire. I want him to be a Matthew Claremont.
That's why she writes about a vampire instead of just some guy.
Right. I don't want it to be some short, stumpy, poor dude that knows nobody.
The guy who works at the convenience store does not make a good romantic hero. Sorry.
Right, exactly.
I know.
Unless he's like a secret Navy SEAL spy or something.
And I like vampires like that, but he was just extra, extra everything. Yeah. It was just too much, this guy. And as you guys know, later on, when Hamish kind of takes him down to bare bones, then you get to see the layers. And I didn't see the layers at this point. At this point in time, I'm just like, this guy is just so too much. He's too much. And
yeah.
Whatever it is, you know, I was Sarah at this point. Stay the hell away from him. He's no good.
Well, and if you think really and truly think about it at this point, this is what happens when a writer who doesn't really read vampire literature and is not really familiar with the genre, I mean, she's kind of going from the surface too.
Right,
right, right.
I mean, and as the story goes along, I think Deb also becomes more comfortable with exactly what a vampire entails from a literature and literary and story mechanism standpoint too.
And her vampire. I mean,
right.
Her world.
Yes.
Right. I think she has said before she has gone into this wondering if vampires lived among us, what would they do for a living? How would they be? And I think this is her interpretation of how an everyday vampire who has lived a very long time, who would be around Oxford, would be. And she convinced me eventually, yes, but I wasn't convinced. He was too extra at this point for me.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely a historian's vampire. He's a historian's creation, and I appreciate that.
Right.
So do I.
So tell me more is what I felt.
Yeah.
Oh, it's funny.
And we will tell you all more later. We will tell you more, readers and listeners, but not today because we're at the end of chapter 5 and we're only doing the first 5.
The first 5. So this brings this to an end. So let's move on and we can talk about news that is not news, Angela.
News that is not news. San Diego Comic-Con announced that Deb was going to be a panelist in July, to which Deb quote tweeted that she's not going to be appearing at Comic-Con. So you can cross San Diego Comic-Con off the list of Deb appearances, but she still will be at All Souls Con in September.
Right. So that segues into All Souls Con. And
then hopefully that means we may be treated to some bigger announcements.
Maybe. If they don't.
At All Souls Con.
Right. Maybe if they don't happen before
if
that.
They don't come right away.
Right. So let's talk about All Souls Con and the fact that tickets, by the time this podcast episode gets published, tickets will be on sale. And,
yes, they will.
Yep. Early bird tickets will be $79 per pass. And that is up until June 15th, right?
Matthew's re-birthday.
Right. And
yes.
And online, the virtual passes will be $12 until June 15th. And after that, they will go up to $16. I think I'm right. I don't have it in front of me. And then on the Sunday after All Souls Con, I think there's a charity breakfast. And
there is.
Yeah, fundraiser breakfast.
Right. And there's...
And that's $169, I think.
$160.
Right. And there's only going to be 20 seats for that. So if you're interested in that, make sure you go to allsoulscon.org and log in and sign up and hopefully you'll be able to get a ticket to the charity breakfast. And what else?
Wait, let me just add, if you go to allsoulscon.org, you can also see the 2015 All Souls Con.
Mm-hmm.
A little video snippet so you can see what it was like at that time and hopefully pique your interest. Actually, it's a 4-hour video, so
right.
Get your cup of tea or your coffee or whatever it is and settle in for All Souls Con 2015.
Right. And if you ever were curious as to what we looked at, what we look like, we're on there too. I don't think much has changed since then.
Yeah. Early in the morning with not enough coffee.
Right. We still look the same there. I don't think we're hungover in those. No, the hungover was the next day.
Yeah.
Oh, that was funny. But, yeah, so. Oh, and the Facebook group.
Yeah. All Souls Con attendees.
Yes. So if you're planning on going or not planning on going or just want to be a virtual attendee or you're just curious, make sure you join the Facebook group and it's called All Souls Con attendees. And, I'll put a link in the show notes. So there is that. And, we have some housekeeping to do because we are Valentine's giveaway winner.
Emrys.
Yeah. See, these people and these names. Emrys. Is that how you say that? Emrys?
That's my guess.
Okay.
Hopefully it's right.
Okay. So Emrys.
Bygones if it's not.
Emrys, I apologize if it's wrong. What did she do? She put out an Instagram video showing her winnings from the giveaway, which we really appreciated. You know, she thanked us. She thanks Deb Harkness for the books and everything like that. Well, I thought it was really cool. And I thought it was great that... and. So great. We should acknowledge it here. So thank you, Emrys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We can put a link in the show notes too, because now Instagram has that feature where you can post multiple photos or videos. And she did a 4-part video, which was really cool because she said how much Deb's work means to her and how great the prizes are. And she wears the necklace nonstop. And thank you very much because it makes my day every time I see that.
Yeah. It was a great video. So hopefully it'll let me embed it, but I'll embed it in the show notes. So you guys can all watch that. And so that's it. We did news that isn't news. We did some housekeeping. Let's just kind of wrap it up. But after this break, we'll do last thoughts and things we can't let go of. All right, everybody, listen to us wherever it is you like to listen to your podcast shows. iTunes users, we'd love it if you leave us a 5-star rating plus a review. Contact us on social media. We are Demons Domain and Demons Discuss. You can email us directly, demonsdomain@gmail.com. And you can leave us a voicemail. That number is 360-519-7836. Again, 360-519-7836. Leave us a voicemail and you'll wind up on the show. I'll edit it so you sound good. No worries. Also, become a discusser by visiting our podcast page. That is demonsdiscuss.com. You can scroll down, fill out the little short form, and add your name, email address, click submit, fill out the short code, submit that, and then we'll add you to our discusser list, just as easy as that. You'll get our emails once or twice a month, and we'll ask you a question, and your answers will wind up on the show. And we love our discussers right now. They're great. It's a growing community. We'd love it if you join. Don't forget to visit our home base, and that is demonsdomain.com. Again, www.demonsdomain.com. Everything we're doing will be listed on that website. All of our social media, our podcasts, all of our posts, and you'll find all of our episodes there. So we'll see you on the internet. Okay, you guys ready with your last thoughts?
I don't have any.
All right, so Angela has none. Jean, last thoughts and things you can't let go of.
Things I can't let go of. I still can't let go of our one with personality because Myers-Briggs stuff just keeps popping up in my feed ever since we played with that. And it keeps coming up in other aspects of my online life and it just always makes me laugh.
Oh, you know what? I'm on a Penguin panel where I get to see covers and give my input and stuff. And there is a new book possibly coming out called The Four Hidden Tendencies. So that is layered on top of the personality profile. So I'm interested to see what that's all about. But sorry, I digress. I jumped on to yours.
You did not digress. You expanded.
That's right. So we'll count that as your last thoughts, Miss Angela. You did have
that
last
is my
thought.
Last thought. Yes, I can never just not have a last thought, I guess.
Right. So
what's yours?
This is episode 13, and I'm just going to go ahead and disclose this is take two of episode 13. Take two of take 13. So this is going to happen this time because I've willed it so, and I've put it out in the universe. So there's that thought. There's also, we got a tweet from Claire. Thank you, Claire, for letting us know. Discussers, if you're hearing this and you haven't been getting your emails, check your spam folders, because Claire let us know that, you know, we put out an episode and she tweeted us and she's like, oh my God, I found you guys' email and it was my spam folder. So if you're wondering why you're not getting your emails, check your spam folder and mark it as, hey, when I get emails from these guys, it's not spam. So we'd appreciate it if you do it. And so this way you'll get our emails and you'll be able to respond back. So I imagine that's frustrating. You hear an episode and it's like, wait, I didn't get that email. Check your spam folders.
Right. And let's hear back from you too. I mean, if you're up to it, answer one of our questions. If you have a topic for us to discuss in the future, we're game for that too. We'll discuss anything.
Right. So Jean, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, because my thing flashed and said, Jean, join the group call again. We keep dumping you out the back, man.
Right.
I know. It's like that back gate on the station wagon just does not.
Well, maybe you shouldn't lean on the window with your face plastered to it, sticking your tongue out at the guy driving behind us, Miss Jean.
Yes, Mom.
All right. I think we're good here.
I think so, too.
Right.
It's time to say goodbye.
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 Farewell.
Angela.
See you soon.
Is Angela going to sing for us?
Not today.
Not today. Okay. And Jean, your demon kiss. We didn't get that yet.
Demon kiss.
There we go. And goodbye, audience. We'll talk to you next time.